Today, for those of you watching, House Joint Resolution 39 has been pulled from the meeting today. And the first hearing we'll have today is on House Joint Resolution 52. Representative Wissnant, please.
Chair and honorable committee members, thank you for hearing this bill. For the record, I'm Gene Wissnant, State Representative, District 53. I appreciate you hearing House Joint Resolution 52. This actually, Mr. Chair and committee members, started out at the request of a constituent who wanted a bill passed to protect disturbances at funerals. We actually submitted that bill, and it didn't include just military people, it included everyone, and that's still in the system. And legislative counsel proposed to me that they're concerned that the federal law, which was passed, would not stand up to a court decision because it could be violation of freedom of the speech. But, Mr. Chair and committee members, I've just learned that a federal judge last Friday upheld significant portions of a state law that limits when and where people may protest at funerals. The 2006 law was aimed at a small fundamentalist Kansas church whose members picket burials of U.S. troops killed in combat. I think that's the same group that was demonstrating in Madras and were threatening to protest in Redmond when I attended Lance Corporal Newman's funeral service in Redmond. The law, the Ohio law, prohibits protesters from being within 300 feet of a cemetery, funeral home, church, or synagogue, either 1 hour before or after burial service. The district attorney said the law upholds a long tradition of American culture in allowing mourners to pay their respect to the deceased without disruption and gives protesters ample alternatives to express their views. So that's new information, Mr. Chair, that I just received. This bill is a referral to the people for a constitutional change, and I'll be glad to answer any questions that you or the committee members have.
Are there any questions from the committee? Okay, thank you, Representative. Thank you for bringing that bill for us and the new information. General Caldwell.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Brigadier General Mike Caldwell, Deputy Director of the Military Department. We've looked at the bill, and we think that it's a good idea to let people make that decision. So we support it.
Any questions in general?
I just got a comment, Mr. Chair. Don't these folks got anything more constructive to do than to harass somebody burying their dead? Now, I'm no fan of this war. I don't know if it's doing any good or not, but for the life of me, you'd think they'd have a little more respect than that. So that's just all I wanted to say.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I just make one comment. We haven't had a lot of difficulty in Oregon with the funerals that we've been involved in, and I think that's a good sign for Oregonians. So it's not like it's an epidemic situation. But there have been a couple of minor incidents that were handled very appropriately, I think, by local law enforcement and the people involved. It certainly isn't something that is running rampant throughout the state. I can assure you of that, and I've attended a good number of the funerals that were done here. So,
well, and one more thing, please. Willamette National Cemetery is in my district a few blocks from my house. So I've never attended any. I don't know any of the men and women, but I see them going, the processions going by more than I care to think about. So,
Mr. Chair, and I think that brings up a good point. That means it's a good time to do this, because I remember as a kid, and there are people who are senior to me here, that were here during the Vietnam War, and we didn't have that luxury then. People did go protest funerals and things like that, and so it might be a good environment to do this in.
Mr. Chair, I also distributed an email that I received from Kevin O'Reilly asking that we consider, and I would like not to necessarily offer this as a amendment. I would rather give it to Representative Wissnant, who has not did not receive this, and ensure that it's something that he would like to pursue. So therefore, I understand you're not taking action work session on this. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Scott. Andrew Meyer, please.
Good afternoon, Chair Barker, members of the committee. Andrea Meyer, I'm the legislative director for the ACLU of Oregon. It's a pleasure. This is the first time I've appeared before you this session. We are here in opposition to House Joint Resolution 52, and I'd like to explain some reasons why. This is a constitutional amendment to Oregon's Bill of Rights, specifically our free speech provision. And my understanding of this type of legislation in general has been introduced in places across the country because of the demonstrations by Fred Phelps. And I want to say at the outset, and it should be obvious, that the ACLU finds the beliefs and activities of Mr. Phelps and his group to be abhorrent. However, free speech and the right to protest peacefully extend to all of us, even if our messages are unpopular and distasteful. These laws have been held as content-based restriction. I'm not familiar with the decision that the representative referred to earlier, but as I will discuss shortly, our Oregon constitutional free speech provision is more protective, and so I would not rely solely on a determination of federal case law under the First Amendment to analyze whether these laws can go forward. While we disagree with Mr. Phelps's message that tolerance of gay people has corrupted America, it is not the job of the government to silence speech that we don't want to hear. Indeed, the response to speech that is offensive is more speech, particularly speech as to why we disagree. In Kentucky, the law there has been enjoined, and one of the problems was it was interpreted differently in cities across the state because of its vague terms, and that's one of the fatal flaws of much of these laws. In some counties, officials have applied the law in such a broad manner that it restricted the speech of any private resident during a funeral, regardless of their message. And in yet other counties, it was directed towards specifically Phelps and specific content of the speech. Indeed, provisions can often be so broad, as they noted in the Kentucky case, it could be a crime to whistle while walking down the street within earshot of a funeral, or to stop and converse on the public sidewalk adjacent to a funeral home or a place of worship. Another problem with these laws, unfortunately, has been the fact that they are being held unconstitutional, and the state ends up paying Mr. Phelps a whole lot of money for attorney's fees, something we would not like to see here. The reality is speech can be cruel. It can be distasteful, and it can be upsetting, and it's still protected by the First Amendment and by the Oregon Bill of Rights, Article 1, Section 8. But in addition, you know, as I mentioned just a moment ago, these laws do and can have unintended consequences. They can get protesters who unknowingly organize along a funeral route or by striking workers or abortion protesters. They'd either be arrested or banned from picketing as well. On the other hand, attempting to limit whose protests are permissible, you really get into a content viewpoint discrimination. But now I want to address Oregon, because, as I said earlier, this is a constitutional referral, I believe, because people would think that most of the statutes that are put in place in other states would run afoul of Article 1, Section 8 of our constitutional provision. And that's our free expression provision, and it's distinctly different than the First Amendment. And Oregonians have actually been asked to vote on amending our free expression provision four times in the last 12 years. And each and every time, Oregonians have rejected it. In 1994, it was Measure 19, and that had to do with obscenity and child pornography. And it was defeated. In 1996, it was Measure 31, again dealing with obscenity and child pornography, and it was defeated. In 2000, it again had to do with allowing cities and counties to zone sexually-oriented businesses, again defeated. But most recently, this past election cycle, another measure that the ACLU opposed was Measure 46, because that amended our free speech provision to allow regulation on contribution expenditures. Every single county opposed it, and it was defeated 40-60%. Now, I think it's important to note that you all recall that the statutory scheme of campaign finance, Measure 47, was passed by voters. And some people look at it and say, well, they must have been confused. You know, they rejected the constitutional amendment but passed the statute. I was behind polling on that measure. I know what messages we put out there, and what voters heard and understood was, don't amend our free expression provision. And that was the messaging around 46. So be it when it's obscenity issues or when it's campaign finance, even if they like the idea of campaign finance, they're saying they don't want to amend our Bill of Rights. And so, again, today I come to you to urge you not to move this out, to suggest that Oregonians, again, having voted recently and many times in the last 12 years, have said one thing over and over again, please don't amend Article 1, Section 8 of our free speech provision. And I'll just note, because sometimes the non-lawyers or even smart people who are, most people who are not lawyers are the smart people, there's two ways to amend Article 1, Section 8 of our Constitution. One is to actually amend the provision, Article 1, Section 8, and add new language. And there's another way, and that's what this does. So I want to make clear, when I say this amends Article 1, Section 8, and you look at it and say, but Ms. Meyer, it's just creating a new section in the Constitution, that there's an implicit way to amend our free speech provision, and that's by creating a new, more recent provision to our Constitution that affects a current provision and modifies it. And that's what this would do here, is it modifies and would, we believe, weaken our free speech provision. I appreciate your time today. Thank you so much. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions for Ms. Meyer? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your input. And Mr. Warnock, I'm sorry, please come up. I had you at the head of the list there, and I
That's fine.
Glanced down, I saw the Reagan, I thought that was Gene Felicnan. So.
Okay. Greg Warnock, Oregon War Veterans Association, Salem, Oregon. We wholeheartedly support this memorial or resolution and suggest that this is the time to actually do this. We think the people in the citizenry in Oregon will be supportive of this, irregardless of the comments we've just heard, and think that the way that this is being proposed is the way to address the issues that the ACLU is discussing. So we support this completely. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Warnock?
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Barker. For the record, Bill Flutting speaking for myself and a veteran. I'm not an expert on the Bill of Rights, but I know a little bit of it. And a grieving family has every right in the world to be protected from a disturbance when you're laying a member to rest. And that's the end. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just want to say a comment here. We buried my dad. He wasn't a combat veteran. He was a veteran. We had a military, the VFW and all that. But all I got to say is this, and maybe I shouldn't say this, but my brothers and I didn't grow up in a, you know, really on the right side of the tracks, and I guess, and there were a bunch of our young boyhood pals there, and if there had been anyone harassing our service, there would have been some civil rights broken. I'm confident of that, and I'm just going to leave it at that, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Okay. We'll close the public hearing on House Joint Resolution 52 and open a hearing on House Joint Memorial 19. A work session, right? I'm sorry. Mr. Keller.
Thank you. House Joint Memorial 19 urges Congress to fund transportation of and United States Department of Defense to transport comfort items to troops overseas at no cost on military flights. There is a -1 amendment, which I have attached. The amendment urges Congress to change the spending on veteran health care from discretionary spending to direct spending in addition to transporting comfort items for the troops on military flights. The fiscal statement that we have is based on the bill as it's written now. If the amendment is adopted, we will get another fiscal for the amendment also.
Okay, well, does that require a referral? Or move that to the House?
No.
Okay. Speaker. We have a speaker for this? Work session.
Okay,
work session. No, we don't. And the reason for the amendments, was we picked up another resolution that slipped through the cracks early on, and so we wanted to join that together. It's getting late in the session. It'd be kind of tough to start a new one again.
We're merging the two together, Mr. Chair. Conceptually, the idea is to merge the two.
Right. Yes. Okay, I'll open a public, or, yeah, no, work session on House Joint Memorial 19. Is there a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move House Joint Memorial 19 to be amended with the Dash 1 amendment.
Representative Schaffler moves the Dash 1 amendments. Are there any objections?
No, just a question.
Okay.
What's the other memorial that we're trying to merge into this? Was there?
There wasn't.
Okay.
Yeah,
thank you.
There was supposed to be one that wasn't, and that's.
I'm sorry, I just didn't quite understand what you said.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for getting that clarified. Seeing no objections, Dash 1 amendments are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move House Joint Memorial to the House floor with the due adopt as amended recommendation.
Representative Schaffler moves House Joint Memorial 19 to the House floor with the due adopt recommendation as amended. Is there any further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Do we need a fiscal impact?
We do not, according to the administrator.
With the Dash 1s?
With the Dash 1s.
And what did we do when we added the Dash 1s?
Mr.
Keller, what did we do when we added the Dash 1?
What were the Dash 1s?
Those are
I understand. What did we do in the Dash 1s that changed it to where we now, or where it would not have additional cost? Potential additional cost.
This is a continuation of the memorial. It's not requiring anyone to spend or expend any funds, and it's not affecting revenue.
Okay, yeah, it's not. We're not doing that. Okay,
Chair, if I understand correctly, I mean, voting on something's more. Basically, what we're doing is we take this and then we send it in a letter to the five congressmen and the president, right?
That's correct.
That's the extent.
Yes.
39 cents times five. Okay.
That's $1.90. I got it, sir. Okay. You're going to make that donation.
If there's no more motions, we have a motion. Okay, call the roll, please.
Representative Boquist?
Aye.
Representative Talon?
Aye.
Representative Schaffler?
Aye.
Representative Scott?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye. Representative Boquist, would you carry this, possibly co-carry it with Representative Nelson? Or she can carry
take one step forward.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I'd be delighted to carry this in case Representative Nelson does not want to.
Okay, thank you. Resolution passes. Okay, so next item is. Next item, open a work session on House Bill 3158. And Mr. Keller, please.
House Bill 3158 was first heard on April 5th. It allows the employer credit against income taxes for amounts paid as compensation to employees who are members of military services, Oregon National Guard, or other organized militia during periods in which employees are providing active duty military service. Applies to tax years beginning on or after July 1st, 2007. Takes effect on the 91st day following adjournment signing die. This bill has a subsequent referral to revenue, and it has a Dash 1 amendment. It was at the request of General Caldwell and Representative Boquist to ensure we covered those military personnel serving under Title 32, and we added the words upon mobilization.
Okay. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3158 to be amended with the Dash 1 amendment.
Representative Schaffler moves the Dash 1 amendment. Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3158 to the Committee on Revenue with a due pass as amended recommendation.
Representative Schaffler moves House Bill 3158 to the Committee on Revenue with a due pass as amended recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Will the assistant call the roll, please?
Representative Boquist?
Aye.
Representative Talon?
Aye.
Representative Schaffler?
Aye.
Representative Scott?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye.
Motion carries. We'll open a public hearing and possible work session on House Joint Memorial 14. Mr. Keller?
Yeah.
House Joint Memorial 14 urges Congress to enact the National Guard and Reserve Retirement Act that provides for National Guard and Reserve members to attain 30 years of service or 55 years of age to immediately receive military retiree pay.
Okay, General Caldwell.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Brigadier General Mike Caldwell, Deputy Director of Military Department. House Joint Memorial 14, in essence, the way it's written, is in concert with several pieces of legislation that are sitting in the United States Congress and have sat there for over the last decade or so at different times and different shapes. Essentially what it says is that if a member of the Guard or Reserve becomes eligible for retirement benefits vis-a-vis 20 years of service, then at age 55 they can receive those benefits, not unlike an active duty person who does 20 years and immediately receives upon retirement after 20 years an annuity, which is typically 50% of the base pay that they received. The way the Guard retirements are structured, so that you know, it's not a flat out 50% of the base pay. It's based on how many days of federal service you did with respect to that time frame over 20 years. Then that is calculated on a by-day point basis. So the typical guardsman will get an annuity at age 60 if they qualify with their 20 years. They will get a retirement at age 60 that is somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 to 20% of their base pay. So it's not, you know, make it clear that they don't automatically get the same as the active duty. We've been arguing this with the Congress, or proposing this to the Congress for a number, and the DOD we've been arguing with. The Guard and the Reserve have for a number of years, probably the last 10 or 15 years. We believe it's patently unfair and certainly not commensurate with what the Guard and Reserve is today, whereas before, probably when I joined 35, 36 years ago, it was clear the Guard and Reserve was a rather deep reserve force. Since the total force policy really started with President Nixon and his administration, and really in the entire Guard and Reserve into the mix, the total active component, things have changed dramatically, and we've seen that in this particular conflict in Afghanistan and Iraq. So we're no longer a deep reserve. We're an operational reserve, and that constitutes, I think, a leveling of the playing field with respect to how our people are treated. And aside from that, it also is a great retention value if we can convince people to stay in, and that's where our value is. When we can get people that are already trained, it costs hundreds of thousands of dollars to train a new troop, and if you can retain them, it's a whole lot better deal for you to retain the ones that are trained and the seasoned veterans. So with that, I'll answer any of your questions. Again, it's this is the second legislative session we've asked for this joint memorial, and in both instances, or the first instance, it passed without any difficulty. Congress still didn't move on it, and I'm not sure that they will this time, but, you know, we might as well keep trying, I guess.
I have a question. So if the pay was going to be at age 60, $1,000 a month, at age 55, is it $1,000 a month as well?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that's correct. That's okay. And again, there are proposals out there that suggest that at 30 years, there's about three different major bills that are kind of sitting in the Congress right now. One of them suggests that you can get your pay earlier, but if you don't have 30 years, then you take a reduction in what you would have gotten with 30 years or age 60. The simplest is to do it at 55, which is what this says.
Okay. Thank you. Questions? Representative Morris.
Just for the record, Mr. Chair, unless you think you were a lieutenant general with 35 years, you couldn't get to $1,000 in the reserve.
Yeah, it's not going to break the bank.
He's used to the years. I'm reading a book about the contractors in Iraq, and they start out like at $600 a day, and they said a four-star general is $425 a day. So,
yes, sir. Hey, Mr. Chair, I might tell you what the value of the four-star general is before I even tell you the value of the contractors.
Thank you, General. Okay, and I close the public hearing on House Joint Memorial 14, open a work session. Is there a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move House Joint Memorial 14 to the floor with a due adopt recommendation.
Representative Schaffer moves House Joint Memorial 14 with a due adopt recommendation. Is there any discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative
Rolfe? Here.
Representative
Cowan? Aye.
Representative
Shuffler?
Aye.
Representative
Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. And
Mr. Chair, I'd like to carry this. I love pensions.
Okay. How many do you get?
As far as that goes, in the labors, if I may, Mr. Chair, in the labors, 30 years plus your age equals 80, okay. You get full benefits. So you should have bumped it down to 50. Still would have my vote. I see. Thank you.
Okay. No further business before the committee. Meeting adjourned.
Put this on your desk.
Okay, yeah.
I'm out the rest of the night.